From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Francisco in the Glen Park area.
Sunset. Portola Valley.
I currently reside in Nob Hill.
West Portal.
I live in Russian Hill.
Coming up, California voters have a choice. Speed up the death penalty or get rid of it entirely.
That's the finality of death. It's irretrievable. Nobody can bring something back from the dead.
Then meet the man who calls the games for what may be the best basketball team ever assembled.
If I can bring them inside the arena and have them feel the experience in this building, then I've done my job.
And the Golden State Warriors team up against the San Quentin Warriors in the prison yard.
I'm feeling blessed, baby. I'm ready. Put in work, with my team and make history, man.
Which Dubs are you rooting for? That's next on Cross Currents. Stay with us. If you've moved to California recently, you might not realize it's one of 30 states with the death penalty because these days no one's being executed. More than a decade ago, a judge ordered a halt until the state changed its execution method. Since then, California's death row has swelled to nearly 750 people, the largest in the country. Even before 2006, when executions did take place, death row appeals still took decades. And this November, voters can decide if they want to speed that process up to get the executions back up and running or eliminate them altogether. KALW's Holly J. McDeed has the story.
Some say California's death penalty is inhumane. Others say it's appropriate justice for society's worst criminals. Everyone agrees that it's really, really slow.
This was sentencing day in one of the most notorious murder cases of our time.
It was way back in 1996 when Mark Class stood up in a courtroom and asked that the man who murdered his daughter be executed.
The honorable way out would be for him to commit suicide. It's the least he can do to alleviate our pain. But since he does not have the goodness or the courage within him to take even that step, the state is placed in the terrible situation of having to make that decision for him.
He's speaking to Richard Allen Davis, who kidnapped his daughter, 12-year-old Polly Class, from a Petaluma slumber party. Flash forward 23 years to today. His daughter's killer is still appealing a sentence.
My kid needs peace in death. And as long as that sickness is running through his mind, then she's not receiving the peace that she deserves. It's only when he's eliminated, only when he's gone, only when he no longer exists, that Polly's memory will no longer be soiled.
Davis's execution isn't likely to happen anytime soon. In 2006, a judge ordered California to stop all executions and review the state's lethal injection protocol. Contra Costa County District Attorney Mark Peterson says the death penalty is frozen despite popular support. 4 years ago, Californians voted to keep the death penalty.
And their will is being thwarted because of people that are philosophically opposed to the death penalty, including the legislators, members of our administration, and lawyers that thwart the death penalty at every step.
While death penalty advocates can't force executions to take place, they're hoping they might be able to speed up the appeal process. Enter Prop 66. The ballot measure that would put a 5-year deadline on death penalty appeals.
The average time for someone to, after they receive a death verdict by a jury, till they receive an execution date is 25 years. About 13 for the state appeals and another 12 for the federal appeals. So it is a system that's broken, and Prop 66 is the attempt by law enforcement to fix the process.
For most of his life, former El Dorado supervisor Ron Briggs wanted executions to speed up too. But now he's swapped sides and is backing a different proposition, Prop 62. Prop 62 would end the death penalty altogether.
I'm a conservative. I helped lead the campaign that brought the death penalty back to California. I thought we'd save money. Instead, we've wasted $5 billion on just 13 executions. That's why I support Prop 62.
Briggs opposes the death penalty for two of the same reasons a lot of people do, morality and money. In 2005, he went back to church and became opposed on principle. Then a death penalty retrial was scheduled to take place in town, and Briggs saw the price tag up close.
That was the time of which the world was falling apart in a recession. Three budget requests comes in for $1.1 million to pay for the Karras retrial, coming right out of our contingency. Half of what we're trying to save, the DA just takes out, and we don't have anything to say about it.
But he really changed course when he realized how painful the lengthy appeal process can be for victims. During the retrial, the victim was forced to relive the day she and her friend were kidnapped. She survived being shot in the neck, but her friend was raped and murdered.
I still cry. How the heck did we write an initiative that plucks this woman 26 years later out of the sanctity of her home and force her to sit 15 feet away from that jerk and live it all over again?
Prop 62 would both abolish the death penalty and turn death sentences into life without the possibility of parole.
I truly think if you had a system where we just had the closure of one trial, throw them the key away, and never ever have to deal with these guys again, there is closure. And then the entire industry of death in California dies itself.
Okay, so let's review. If Prop 62 passes, no more death penalty. If Prop 66 passes, executions get sped up. If both pass, the one with the most votes wins. Simple, right? Sounds simple, but it's not. How would executions be streamlined under Prop 66? That's an important and controversial detail. Contra Costa County District Attorney Mark Peterson says the main reason the process takes so long is that there's a huge shortage of death row attorneys. The very state agency created to help speed up death penalty appeals only has 34 death row attorneys on staff.
Well, the first problem is that it takes 5 years for someone to even get assigned an attorney when they're on death row. Now, that's a horrible situation. They should get an attorney right away.
Prop 66, he says, would fix that by requiring some attorneys to accept death row cases.
These attorneys are competent to do it. We think there's many of them, hundreds of them throughout the state of California that could do this. So we think the claim that there aren't qualified attorneys to do it is simply false.
With more defense lawyers available, Prop 66 would assign attorneys to death row inmates immediately and put a 5-year deadline on appeals. If Prop 66 passes, appeals would begin at the trial court rather than the state Supreme Court. Those attorneys would have 1 year to prove whether or not the death row inmate had a fair trial. But trial attorney Daryl Stallworth doesn't think that's realistic.
The trial courts are overwhelmed. To put that burden on a trial court when they're trying sometimes 5-6 cases themselves, I don't believe any of the trial judges would ever find that to be an accurate or an efficient use of their time.
Stallworth says the death penalty cases are complicated. Many inmates were sentenced before forensic technology was available, and he says death penalty appeals take a long time for a reason.
A lot of people are sitting on death row based on an eyewitness testimony. Those people deserve to have their case properly reviewed. Talking about someone's life being sped through a process just for the sake of efficiency when we know that innocent people have been executed.
And there's another issue. Even if Prop 66 passes, executions will remain frozen until the state reviews its lethal injection protocol. Mark Class says he knows the man who killed his daughter might never be executed, even if the appeal process speeds up.
I know where he's at. I know that he's like number 450 on a list of 750 in a state that's executed 13 in 30 years. I get all that. The fact that he might not be executed, I understand that that's a very real possibility.
But Class isn't giving up on death row.
But the idea that he's looking at that and that that might come and that that might happen, I think is maybe all I'll get. And if that's all I get, that's what I'll take.
The death penalty is on a steady decline across the country. So far this year, only 5 states have even carried out executions. Here in California, the effort to abolish the death penalty leads in the polls, with 48% backing the measure. Roughly a third of voters support Prop 66 to speed up the death penalty. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
You can find more information about all of California's propositions at kalw.org. Click the elections box in the top right-hand corner of the homepage. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Tonight, the Golden State Warriors kick off the 2016-2017 NBA season at home in Oakland. It's an exciting time to be a Bay Area basketball fan. After a win and a loss in the NBA Finals, they've added superstar Kevin Durant to an already stacked team.
But for the Golden State Warriors, tonight is about a welcome. Kevin Durant will show up at Oracle wearing a Warriors uniform for the first time, and he's sure to get a warm East Bay welcome.
That's the voice of Tim Roy. He's watched players come and go for more than 20 years as the radio host of the Golden State Warriors. KLW's Justine Lee met up with the play-by-play man at a preseason game to see what it's like to have one of the best views in the basketball business.
It's 2 hours before tip-off, and droves of fans in a sea of blue and gold stand with signs, take selfies, and cheer as they watch the Warriors warm up. Up about 60 steps from the half-court sideline in a section broadcasters call the perch, someone else is warming up, too.
Hey there, hi there, ho there, happy as we can be. M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E.
That's Tim Roy, the radio play-by-play announcer starting his 22nd season with the Warriors. Tim has known the team before Steph Curry, before the championship, before it was even a playoff contender. With all those years of experience, I want to know, does he get bored or nervous?
I get fired up for games. I'm fired up all the time. I mean, the cool thing about my job is that when I start breaking down the game and the numbers, it never feels like work. Never feels like work.
That's true even when he has to fill the time.
I always prepare like it's going to be a blowout because that way, you're never caught off guard. You always have something you can say, something you can talk about.
Tim's been preparing for this job his whole life. He came from an East Coast family that loved sports.
I'm old enough to remember the transistor radio.
He remembers staying up late listening to 6 or 7 games a night.
I lived in northern Connecticut, and we were close enough to get Boston games, New York games, Philadelphia.
Even the Montreal Expo games in French.
Deux prises, aucune balle contre Bob Bailey. Voici la troisième lancée.
I didn't know much French, but I knew if it was, if he said something like dos dos, I mean, it was 2-2, the count.
The infield overshifted. Here's the pitch. Swung on, belted. It's a long one.
But the person who really inspired Tim's career was Red Barber, the legendary baseball commentator. Tim gobbled up his autobiography.
So I got to hear in his words about being a sportscaster and sitting up in the press box, and I thought that sounds really cool to me.
He was only 8 or 9 at the time.
I knew that this was the job that I really wanted. This is what I always wanted to be.
Tim got his first gig at 19, calling minor league hockey games in upstate New York. Then came minor league basketball, baseball, even Canadian football. Before he settled on basketball, he played on his high school's team and worked hard off court too, scouting his opponents with his brother.
My dad would let us borrow his old station wagon. We'd drive to a high school, watch a game.
To get an edge, they'd take notes on players like,
every time he dribbles the ball hard, he's gonna go up for a shot.
Tim and his brother were always talking the game.
So that, I think, helped me once I got some basketball gigs because the flow of it, the strategy, the nuances were very familiar to me.
I get to see that in action when I join Tim Roy and his broadcast team at The Perch. His fellow sports fanatics handle the soundboard, feed him noteworthy stats, even deliver coffee. They've all got their headsets on, ready to go. Right before the national anthem, they stand up and fist bump each other.
As well as we come back to action, 9-0 run for Golden State. 16-5 the score with 7:18 to go in the first quarter. And the Warriors doing it from downtown. Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry all have hit a three.
Once the game starts, it's about covering the basics, saying where the ball is, and reminding listeners of the score. It turns out you can never say the score enough.
Chris Paul with the ball. Clippers attacking the basket to our right. Pass batted by Curry to the backcourt. As always, mouth guard askew for Steph. Off the screen. Paul has it stolen by Curry. Picked his pocket. But again, Blake.
Here's senior producer R.C. Davis.
Tim's job is to paint that picture. So if you're driving in your car, sitting in your living room, he can tell you where exactly the ball is.
He's worked with Tim for 11 seasons.
Yeah, he's just masterful at telling a story, basically. Great storyteller.
Tim's loaded up his laptop with sound bites to use during breaks in the game, like free throws or a timeout. But many of the stories he shares are in his head.
And that's the great thing about being in one place for a long time is that I can bring up a story from, say, 10 years ago, maybe a Baron Davis or Jason Richardson anecdote that is similar to something that's happening, you know, with the Warriors right now.
Tim tells me many Warriors fans are just as knowledgeable as he is.
They know the NBA. They don't need a scoreboard to tell them when it's time to make noise.
By now, Tim has called more than 1,700 games for the Warriors, and plenty of them were not pretty. Fans and Tim had to put in a lot of time without a championship.
They don't want me to sugarcoat things when things are going bad. And things were bad. They were really bad for a while.
It's his job to keep fans engaged, which makes his most memorable call of all time that much sweeter.
Cavaliers to bring it up. Warriors 105, Cleveland 97, J.R. Smith.
Game 6 of the 2015 NBA Finals.
Rebound. It's taken 40 years, but once again, the Bays team is the best team. The Golden State Warriors have won the NBA title.
I was thinking about, you know, now this generation has their own Warrior championship team. It's not their dad's team. It's not their grandfather's team. It's their team.
Final score, Warriors 105 and the Cleveland Cavaliers 97.
It was an emotional moment. It was an unbelievable moment. It's a moment a broadcaster dreams of.
And the Warriors win the 2015 NBA Finals 4-2. The Warriors have gone from years of being a punchline to the front of the line.
DeAndre Jordan bats the ball to Paul, who takes it to the right elbow, down the lane, to the box, throws it up on the rim. That won't fall. Pachulia gets the rebound away from Paul, throws to Durant, and here come the Warriors.
Back at Oracle Arena, fans get to watch Kevin Durant play as a newly minted Warrior for the first time. When he scores his first basket, no surprise, Dub Nation goes wild.
3-on-3, left side Curry. Double team, dribbles by the double team, finds Durant. He's open, he fires for three. Got it!
I myself am jumping up and down, headphones on and recorder in hand. Tim might be equally excited, but he has to call it, sitting down.
And this crowd erupts at the sight of Kevin Durant in a Warriors uniform knocking down a triple. All the Warriors have to do is get it across the timeline. And that's what McCall will do. Those who are left stand and cheer. The Warriors capture preseason game number 2. As the horn will sound, and this one is over. Final score, the Warriors 120, and the Los Angeles Clippers 75, 30 points for Klay Thompson.
After the game, which the Warriors won in a blowout, I asked him about his legacy. Though he's a long way from retiring, he says he hopes fans will think,
hey, you know what? He was good. He worked hard, and he made the games fun. If I can get that from the fan base, and if I can bring them inside the arena and have them feel the experience in this building, then I've done my job.
Something he's done for thousands of fans for more than 20 years. From Oracle Arena, I'm Justine Lee for Cross Currents.
Tim Roy will call the Warriors' first game of the season, a matchup against the San Antonio Spurs at Oracle Arena tonight at 7:30. Find the game on the game at 95.7 FM. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Warriors fans probably think of the Spurs, the Clips, or the Cavs as their biggest rivals. But there's another rivalry just out of sight of the public eye, the Golden State Warriors versus the San Quentin Warriors. That's right. For the last several years, dub stars like Steve Kerr, Draymond Green, and Kevin Durant have stopped by the prison yard to shoot some hoops. The superstars don't play, but the team brass does, led by general manager Bob Myers. A couple years back, the inmates recorded the game, and that's the subject of today's San Quentin Prison Report.
The San Quentin Prison Report.
Bringing you hidden stories from life inside.
In order to make something grow, you gotta own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
Because I like to be free, I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop.
The San Quentin Prison Report's Lewis A. Scott produced this story about when the Warriors played the Warriors.
1, 2, 3, Warriors!
Hello, basketball fans. This is Aaron Showtime Taylor here at San Quentin State Prison to watch a game between Bob Myers and the Golden State Warriors versus Allen Black McIntosh and the San Quentin State Warriors. Last season's loss was pretty devastating for the Golden State Warriors. They didn't want to blemish on their record, so they're coming back in here with a new focus. And last year's win for the San Quentin State Warriors was one of the best things that they've had against Bob Myers, because Bob Myers is a double-double man when he comes in here. All right, the players are coming on the court to line up to start this off. It'll be Bob Myers versus the Phenom, Harry Smith, in the circle for the tip. Ball goes up, Bob Myers wins the tip, and the Golden State Warriors have the ball.
Today I'm talking to the ex-NBA player Steve Kerr, who happens to be the head coach for the Golden State Warriors. Mr. Kerr, what brings you to San Quentin today?
Well, we're here with some of our players and coaches, and we're looking for a good game of hoop here, and we just wanted to come visit a lot of the guys at San Quentin. We know we got a lot of Warrior fans in here, and we wanted to be a part of it and spend some time with them.
And we pull up at the end of the first quarter with the Golden State Warriors 22, the San Quentin Warriors 13.
My name is Montrell Vines. Shit, I'm feeling blessed, baby. I'm ready, you know what I mean, put in work, you know, with my team and make history, man. When I say make history, the only way we're going to do that is win.
Just having those guys come in here, like professional basketball players, it's just crazy, because growing up where I grew up at in Baby Hunters Point, San Francisco, California, we'd never seen nothing like that. We'd never seen nobody that's famous or no sports big guy come through, kick it with us, you know, none of that. So for them to come in here and treat us like human beings and not no animals or whatever just because of our situations, it was awesome.
As we come up to halftime, the score is 53-43, the Golden State Warriors on the San Quentin Media Sports Network.
Kirk Lakehub. I'm assistant general manager, so I do everything from scouting to contract work. It's been really great. I think this is year three, and it's an awesome opportunity. The thing is, we're all playing with a shared love here, which is basketball. We kind of all come together, and it's something that you really can't explain to anyone on the outside. They don't get it until they come in here.
And as we pull up at the end of the third quarter, the Golden State Warriors are enforcing their will on the San Quentin Warriors, 78-53 on the San Quentin Sports Media Network.
Bob Myers. This is my third time with this group, and I came and played a couple times. And yeah, it's been great. You know, each game has been tough. All the games have been tough, but it's been good. Everybody I've met has been real nice and polite, so it's been fun.
And the San Quentin Warriors take the ball out to start the fourth quarter, down 78-53.
Oh, I believe, and I think our organization believes, that everybody deserves more than one chance. And, you know, I think a lot of people that we've interacted with in here seem like good people that maybe did one thing wrong or made one mistake, and that doesn't mean that you should punish them, you know, for good. So we like to come in and show our support, that we believe in the redemption, and that's probably why.
And to close out the game, Bob Myers comes back and erases last year's loss with a 99-76 victory over the San Quentin Warriors. This is Haroon Showtime Taylor, and this is the San Quentin Media Sports Network.
Well, Well, that's our show for today. Our team includes Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Olivia Henry, Jurgen Klemm, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Chris Hoff, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Andrew Stelzer, Claire Strempel, and Beatrice Thomas. The show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Liza Veal. Julie Kane is our managing producer. Our managing editor is Jen Cheehan. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Madeline Kenny of Oakland. She'll play at the Knockout in San Francisco tomorrow night, part of an evening of indie pop that starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.